Chapter 8. What happens when things go wrong? Abnormal psychology. The previous chapters have been concerned with typical human behavior and with the individual variation within what is considered normal. In contrast, abnormal psychology is concerned with behavior that is atypical and with mental disorders and disabilities. Despite this contrast, the information that has arisen from the study of normal behavior has helped us to understand abnormal behavior. It is only by understanding how the processes involved in normal functioning work, for example, cognition, perception, memory, emotion, learning, personality, development, and social relationships, that we can begin to understand what happens when they go wrong. This chapter will look at how we define abnormal behavior, how we categorize it, and attempt to understand it. What is abnormal behavior? Extreme forms of abnormal behavior are easy to recognize, but the exact line of demarcation between what is normal and what is not is much less clear. For example, it is normal to feel sad after losing someone close to you, but how intensely and for how long? Where does normal grief end and abnormal grief or clinical depression begin? It would be considered abnormal to keep every receipt you have ever been given to the point where there is room for little else in your home. But is it also abnormal to keep most receipts for a year or two just in case? Most of us consider it normal to have irrational fears, for example, of spiders or public speaking. But are they still normal if they are so severe that they prevent you from working or enjoying life? Furthermore, behavior that is normal in one situation may be considered abnormal in another. Being temporarily possessed by God or spirits and speaking in tongues is considered normal in some religions, but in other circumstances it may be interpreted as a sign of serious mental illness. Similarly, historical and cultural factors influence ideas about what is normal, as changes in opinion about sexual practices such as homosexuality show. There are several different ways of defining abnormal behavior. Psychological definitions of abnormal behavior emphasize the current utility of the behavior. If the behavior causes significant distress or prevents you from meeting important goals or developing meaningful relationships, then it is seen as dysfunctional and worthy of treatment. This approach has difficulty in dealing with people who lack insight into their difficulties, such as those who are very depressed and see suicide as a welcome relief, or who believe that their auditory hallucinations are the voice of God, warning them that their neighbor is really the devil. Similarly, defining behavior as abnormal solely on the grounds that it causes great distress is not without difficulties. The behavior may be entirely normal, and it may only be the degree of distress that is abnormal. Medical definitions of abnormal behavior see it as a symptom of an underlying disease, the cause of which may or may not be known. That is, behavior is seen as abnormal if it is thought to be caused by a mental illness such as schizophrenia, depression, or anxiety. The emphasis is on accurate diagnosis of the disease to determine the appropriate, usually pharmacological, treatment. However, lack of agreement or evidence about effective treatments can mean that even if the correct diagnosis is made, there may be no clear implications for treatment. The medical model has been criticized for ignoring the effects of the person's environment and for undermining personal responsibility. It also runs into difficulties when people do not have enough symptoms to qualify for having a particular disease, but have one or two symptoms, such as suspiciousness or social withdrawal, quite severely. Technically, they do not have the illness, although their behavior may appear strikingly abnormal. Abnormality has also been defined in terms of both statistical and social norms. Behavior that is statistically uncommon is seen as abnormal. This approach has been applied to learning disabilities or mental handicap, in that people are judged to be learning disabled if their IQ is in the lowest 2.5% of the population. However, one difficulty for the statistical approach is that many behaviors or attributes that are statistically uncommon are not seen as abnormal. For example, having an IQ in the top 2.5%. Furthermore, some dysfunctional behaviors, such as depression or anxiety, are so common that they are statistically normal. And what is common in one context may not be in another. A degree of depression is a normal response to bereavement, but not to winning the lottery. Similarly, behavior that deviates from what is typical for the social context may be seen as abnormal. Although this approach takes the person's environment into account, it is dependent upon prevailing social and moral attitudes. For example, in Victorian England, people could be hospitalized for kissing in a public place. Or, more recently, some governments have viewed political dissent as abnormal behavior. Existential approaches view abnormal behavior as an inevitable response to an abnormal world, either in terms of the person's immediate world, as in their family, or in societal terms. For example, it may be a response to conflicting demands, such as to show respect and affection while on the receiving end of cruelty and humiliation. This also accounts for the fact that people's abnormal behavior may not be as much of a problem for themselves as it is for those around them. The delusion that one is a very important or famous person may give the person who has the belief a boost, but cause problems for others. Normalizing or health-based approaches try to specify normal behavior or healthy psychological functioning, and then to define abnormal behavior by contrast. Mental health is thought to involve characteristics such as accurate perception of reality, both of one's own capabilities and of the external world, some degree of self-knowledge and awareness of one's feelings and motives, autonomy and confidence in the ability to exert self-control, a sense of self-worth and self-acceptance, the ability to form close and satisfying relationships that are not destructive to either person, and being fairly competent in one's environment. None of the approaches to defining abnormal behavior is completely satisfactory, and it may be better to combine elements of the different definitions. One combined approach that incorporates elements of both social and psychological well-being suggests that while none of the following attributes are necessary or sufficient for behavior to be seen as abnormal, they tend to indicate abnormality. Irrationality and incomprehensibility, unpredictability and loss of control, personal and social maladaptiveness, suffering, unconventionality, violation of moral and ideal standards, and causing distress to others observing the behavior. This approach has the advantage of being more flexible, but a potential disadvantage is that it allows a greater degree of subjectivity. Psychologists have recognized that part of the difficulty in defining abnormal behavior arises from the fact that such behavior may have reflected an entirely adaptive response in an earlier environment. For example, a child who learns to avoid punishment or criticism by keeping quiet may be showing behavior that is functional in those circumstances. However, if the reticence persists into adulthood, then such behavior may become dysfunctional in that it prevents the person from forming relationships with others. Classifying abnormality. There are advantages and disadvantages inherent in attempting to classify the many different forms of abnormal behavior into types. One potential advantage is that if different types of abnormal behavior have different causes, then we may understand more about them by grouping together people with a certain type of abnormal behavior and looking for other similarities in their behavior or history. For example, by studying many people who had panic attacks, similarities in their styles of thinking were noticed. People who experienced panic attacks tended to interpret their bodily sensations as signs of impending catastrophe. Those who had panic attacks were much more likely to interpret feelings of tightness in the chest, a common symptom of anxiety, as a sign of heart disease or impending suffocation. The evidence now suggests that these catastrophic interpretations of body sensations play a causal role in bringing on panic attacks. Classifying and labeling different types of abnormal behavior into diagnoses, which are medical names for disorders, for example, terms such as bulimia nervosa or social phobia, acts as a kind of medical shorthand in that it conveys a lot of information in relatively few words. For example, we know that people with social phobia are overly concerned about doing or saying something that they think will embarrass or humiliate them in front of others, and consequently try to avoid certain social situations or interactions. We can also bring to bear information from treating other socially phobic patients, for example, about what type of treatment is likely to be effective. But when using diagnostic labels, it is important to avoid stereotyping. The danger is that once people are given the label of a phobic, they may be seen as identical to other phobic patients, and important details about their phobia and personal responses to it may be ignored. It can also be dehumanizing in that often it is the person rather than the illness that is labeled, as in, he's a schizophrenic, rather than he is suffering from schizophrenia, as if all people with schizophrenia had identical personalities. Many mental health professionals use a standard method of classifying patients' behavior, both for research purposes and in clinical practice, so that it is clear that people working in different places or settings know that they are referring to the same thing. Currently, the most commonly used classification system is the fourth edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or DSM-4 for short, which is produced by the American Psychiatric Association. Here are some examples of the types of abnormal behavior covered in DSM-4. Schizophrenic and other psychotic disorders. A group of disorders characterized by psychotic symptoms, loss of contact with reality, as in hallucinations or delusions, marked disturbances of thought and perception, and bizarre behavior. Anxiety disorders. Several disorders in which the main symptoms are of anxiety either in response to a particular stimulus, as in phobias, or more diffuse anxiety, as in generalized anxiety. Many of these disorders involve panic attacks, defined in terms of the sudden and intense onset of a number of anxiety symptoms. Mood disorders. Disturbances of normal mood, ranging from extreme depression to abnormal elation, mania, or alternating between the two, manic depression. Somatoform disorders. Physical symptoms, such as pain or paralysis, for which no physical basis can be found, and in which psychological factors appear to play a role. For example, a mother who loses the use of her right arm when her son joins the army, but regains it when he is home on leave. Also included in this category is hypochondriasis, which is an excessive concern with health and a preoccupation with disease, often involving the erroneous belief that one has a fatal disease. Dissociative disorders. Disorders involving a disruption of the usually integrated functions of consciousness, memory, identity, or perception for emotional reasons. Included in this category are multiple personality disorder and amnesia, For example, forgetting being involved in a traumatic experience. Sexual and gender identity disorders includes problems of sexual preferences such as sexual interest in children, pedophilia, or in objects, fetishism. Problems in gender identity such as transsexualism, the belief that you are trapped in a body of the wrong sex, and sexual dysfunctions such as impotence. Eating disorders. Disorders characterized by severe disturbances in eating behavior, for example, anorexia and bulimia nervosa. Sleep disorders. Disorders involving abnormalities in the amount, quality, or timing of sleep, such as insomnia, or abnormal behavior or physiological events occurring during sleep, for example, nightmares, night terrors, or sleepwalking. Impulse control disorders. Disorders involving the failure to resist an impulse, drive, or temptation. For example, kleptomania, involving impulsive stealing for no personal gain. Or trichotillomania, involving habitual pulling out of one's hair for pleasure or tension relief. Personality disorders. Enduring patterns of inner experience and behavior that are pervasive and inflexible, lead to distress or impairment, and deviate from social norms. For example, narcissistic personality disorder involves a pattern of grandiosity, need for admiration, and lack of empathy. Obsessive-compulsive personality is characterized by preoccupation with orderliness, perfectionism, and control. Substance-related disorders, excessive use of or dependence on alcohol or drugs. And factitious disorders, physical or psychological symptoms that are intentionally produced or feigned in order to assume a sick role or gain other benefits such as financial benefits or reduced responsibility. In order to meet the criteria for diagnoses, according to DSM-4, the person must have been experiencing the symptoms for a specified amount of time, and the particular symptoms listed must cause them significant distress or impairment in functioning. So there are not all or none definitions, and it is hardly surprising that untrained people suspect that they have every diagnosis in the book when they first read the list. Explaining abnormal behavior. Throughout history, abnormal behavior has been attributed to a wide variety of causes, from dietary deficiencies to the phases of the moon or evil spirits. More recently, investigators have used scientific methods such as careful observation and hypothesis testing to propose several different theories to account for abnormal behavior. Not surprisingly, these explanations are quite closely related to the different views of personality that were outlined earlier. Explanations of abnormal behavior vary in the degree to which they focus on the past or present, whether they are based on psychological theory or medical models, whether the views of the therapist and patient are given equal weight, and in the treatments they advocate. It is common in psychiatry to use a medical model, which sees abnormal behavior as the result of physical or mental illnesses that are caused by biochemical or physical dysfunctions in the brain or body, some of which may be inherited. One of the early successes of the medical model in explaining abnormal behavior was the discovery that general paresis, a debilitating form of dementia that was common earlier in the last century, was a long-term consequence of infection with syphilis. The main tasks of treatment in the medical model are making the correct diagnosis and administering appropriate treatment. For example, physical treatments such as medications like antidepressants or antipsychotic drugs, or psychosurgery, surgical techniques to destroy or disconnect specific areas of the brain, or ECT, electroconvulsive therapy. Recent advances in pharmacotherapy mean that modern drug treatments do not have the debilitating side effects that were associated with their predecessors. While these drug treatments are effective for many people, we are still some distance from having medications that work for everyone and are free from side effects. Both psychosurgery and ECT were widely used before the advent of drug therapies, and their relatively indiscriminate use gained them a bad reputation. In modern psychiatry, ECT and psychosurgery are used in a much more discriminate and refined manner. Psychosurgery is used with greater precision and only as a last resort when other treatments have failed, in the treatment of chronic severe pain, depression, or obsessive-compulsive disorder. Similarly, ECT is used to induce seizures which affect the balance of chemicals in the brain. Although the practice of ECT has been described as barbaric and inhumane, the use of muscle relaxants and anesthesia mean that it can be given with a minimum of discomfort, and research demonstrates that it can be effective in alleviating depression in patients who have not responded to any other treatment and who may be at risk of suicide. Psychodynamic approaches to understanding abnormality are based on the work of Sigmund Freud and have been expanded by many others. In brief, psychodynamic approaches see abnormal behavior as arising from conflicts between instinctual drives, which lead to anxieties, which are in turn dealt with by defense mechanisms or strategies used to avoid or reduce the experience of the anxiety and to protect the person's ego. Treatment often focuses on the patient's early life experiences and involves the therapist helping to reveal the patient's unconscious motives and to resolve the original conflicts. Psychodynamic therapists developed techniques such as free association, where patients are encouraged to say whatever comes into their minds, and the therapist interprets the associations. They base their interpretations of patients' distress and signs of it, such as their dreams and their feelings towards the therapist, called transference, on psychodynamic theories and models of behavior. In contrast to the psychodynamic approach, humanistic psychotherapy focuses on the present and views the patients as being in the best position to understand their problems. Humanistic approaches see the person's sense of self as critical in promoting personal growth and well-being. The aim of therapy is to promote self-esteem and self-acceptance, which may have been lowered by unhappy events or difficult relationships. Therapy is an enabling process in which the therapist enables patients to reveal their problems in an atmosphere of unconditional positive regard. That is, the therapist is genuinely non-judgmental towards patients and shows warmth and empathy for them. A second set of approaches to understanding abnormality that focus on the present are behavioral and, more recently, cognitive behavioral approaches. Initially, the behavioral approach asserted that it was not necessary to understand the origins of abnormal behavior in order to treat it. Psychological symptoms were seen as maladaptive behavior patterns, which were learned and thus could be unlearned. Such radical behavioral approaches focused solely on observable behavior. Internal events and meanings and the patient's history were largely ignored. Techniques of therapy included reconditioning by, for example, systematic desensitization, in which the patient is taught relaxation techniques and uses them to reduce their anxiety during exposure to a hierarchy of increasingly threatening situations. In this way, situations that were once associated with anxiety subsequently become associated with relaxation and are no longer feared. Nowadays, behavioral approaches are often combined with cognitive approaches. Cognitive behavioral approaches look both at the patient's observational behavior and also at their internal interpretations of the situation, or cognitions. They take into account both history and current patterns of behavior, and they also draw upon the findings of experimental research in cognitive psychology. Adding cognitive elements has been shown to increase both the efficacy of and compliance with behavioral treatments. For example, an agoraphobic patient, whom we shall call Sarah, was too terrified even to contemplate any treatment involving exposure or facing the feared stimulus, in this case, going outside. The therapist used cognitive techniques to discover that Sarah believed that if she went outside, she would be so overwhelmed by anxiety that she would have palpitations, which could induce a heart attack. The therapist helped Sarah to think about her symptoms anew by providing medical evidence indicating that it was highly unlikely that Sarah's symptoms were due to an impending heart failure, and by examining what happened to Sarah during an attack, which indicated that the palpitations were a symptom of anxiety rather than of heart disease. Sarah was sufficiently reassured by this information to begin an exposure program. Later in therapy, a behavioral experiment was used to test Sarah's prediction that anxiety-induced palpitations could bring on heart failure. Sarah tested whether or not these palpitations would lead to heart failure by doing everything she could to bring on a heart attack during the palpitations. For example, staying in a hot room and doing vigorous exercise. When this did not bring on a heart attack, Sarah was finally convinced that her palpitations were due to anxiety and would not cause any permanent damage. Clearly, attempting to differentiate abnormal from normal behavior is not straightforward. What is considered abnormal is somewhat subjective and depends on the context, current values, and norms, and on the way in which both normal and abnormal behavior are conceptualized. Also, different ways of understanding normal personality and normal behavior will influence how abnormal behavior is understood and treated. Many factors contribute to causing abnormal behavior, including genetics, early experiences, learning history, biochemical changes in the brain, unconscious conflicts, recent stressful or traumatic events, and thinking styles. Systems for classifying abnormal behavior into different types have been devised to aid communication and understanding, but their validity has often been questioned. Despite these difficulties, abnormal psychology has provided some understanding of abnormal behavior and of how to help others in difficulty. While such treatments are helpful in ameliorating distress, they do not give us the secret to happiness, but focus on helping the person to return to a normal state. In considering which treatment is best, it must be remembered that it is difficult accurately to compare the efficacy of different approaches, particularly as some approaches are not very amenable to testing. How does one measure the degree of unconscious conflict or self-actualization? The most demonstrably effective treatments are those that are based on testable theories and that have been evaluated using all the props of science: independent assessment, experiments designed to test specific hypotheses, multiple standardized measures, repeated measurement, and appropriate comparison groups. At present, there is evidence that both pharmacological and psychological treatments can be effective in ameliorating distressing symptoms, and psychological treatments such as cognitive behavior therapy may have an advantage over pharmacological treatments in terms of relapse rates, or the proportion of people who deteriorate or relapse once treatment has finished. Abnormal psychology has been able to develop in the way that it has, partly because of advances made in other areas of psychology. Examples include understanding the ways in which perception and attention are influenced by moods, how being fearful keeps one on the lookout for dangers or hypervigilant, how one might be able to detect a signal without being aware of doing so and become distressed without understanding why, how memories can be inaccurate as well as accurate, and how hard it can be to withstand the pressure of a peer group. Future developments in abnormal psychology, whether they are directed towards improving treatments or preventing problems arising, will therefore not take place in isolation, and the ways in which they are applied will need to be subjected to similarly rigorous scientific and ethical standards. Abnormal psychologists attempt to ensure that the facts on which their theories and practices are based are sufficiently well-founded and applied in demonstrably unbiased ways, without coercion, that do not intentionally foster dependency or create additional problems. For this reason, ethical standards for the application of treatments in abnormal psychology have been developed and are constantly being revised in the light of new developments, both scientific and cultural.